Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Young Tony, let's go.
Make me a bicycle clown.
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I'm here with you until Bulls basketball. We got a little bit of room to spread out tonight, which is great. We get to stretch our legs because we're going to go until 8:15. That's when Bulls pregame will be on the air. The Bulls are taking on the Bucks. Toronto is playing Boston early, so that's why, for some reason, the Bulls, if you're like, why is the Bulls-Bucks game at 8:30 when both teams are in the Midwest? That's why, because ESPN's got the television coverage of the game, and they've got the game on starting at 8:30 after this Raptors-Celtics game is on. So we'll talk a little bit about that before the game with our buddy Rami Makhlouf from The Fan in Milwaukee. I got some Packers questions I would like to ask him, too. Dan Durkin is going to join me at 6:40. If you like your football broken down, if you consider yourself a hardcore football fan, if you like what I like to call sexy football, be here at 6:40 because Dan Durkin is going to blow your mind with some of the stuff that and the way that he talks about the game. I love talking with him. Matthew Collar, who works for ESPN 1500 in Minnesota, is going to join me. He does the Purple Podcast. It's good stuff. Learned a lot listening this week to his thoughts on Bears-Vikings. He'll share some of that stuff with you. The crew, Herb Lawrence is the executive producer of the show. He does a great job with it. Young Tony Gill is in charge of the sound. Up and comer in this business, causing problems for people, now being responsible with his opinion, which is great for everyone involved. Before we get to the Bears, we need to clean up something that happened in yesterday's show. And I'll just tell you that there's going to be a dunking on a caller. Now, before I say this, I firmly believe that it is my responsibility to come up with content for the show. Me, Herbie, Tony, if it's Christopher in here, whoever's producing the show, it's our jobs to come up with content for the show. I don't like having to go to callers for content, and I don't necessarily like using callers for content after the fact. But because some of y'all, not all of you, acted a damn fool last night, I've got a dunk on this dude. And I've got a dunk on you, too. So, last night, I was taking calls. We were talking about the Bears. It's Ron, right? Caller Ron? Roy? Caller Roy called up. And he had a theory that he was dying to tell me about. Go out to Elmhurst and talk with Roy. Hey, Roy, you're on the score.
Hey, how you doing? I just want to give you a call. This Sunday, I was able to pick up every pass play that Mitch Trubisky threw on because he has a habit of licking his fingers before he throws the ball. Look at the film. Every run play, he will not lick his fingers. Every pass play, he's licking his fingers. That the offense or the defense is going to pick up on that and be able to key on pass plays. So he needs to take care of that habit or mix it up when he runs, lick his hands. And so that,
let me ask you a question about this. Have you charted every play this season?
Not every play this season, but every play last game.
Unless he
breaks that habit, they're going to know when he's passing.
I'm not saying I don't believe you. It's just that it would be easier for me to believe you if you
look at
said,
the film.
So this went on for a few minutes. For a few minutes, I was like, are you sure you charted every play? Oh, absolutely. And as I'm pushing back against him, people are texting in, oh, you're being Dan Bernstein. The callers are always right. Now, I wasn't necessarily saying that Roy's point was wrong. I was questioning his methodology. I didn't believe that he watched every play of the game. I didn't believe that it was that weird of him to look back, if he felt like that there was something there, to go back and look at a couple other games. I didn't believe it. So, as I'm sitting there listening, watching the DePaul game, I was like, well, maybe I was too hard on Roy. Like, maybe Roy's got a point. And I said, all right, tomorrow morning, I'm going to sit down with my pad and my pen. I'm going to chart every play to see if Roy is right. And guess what? I didn't have to do it for long. I've put the play up on my Twitter account so that if you want, you can watch along. At Lawrence W. Holmes is where you can find it. Literally, the first play from scrimmage. The first play. Trubisky walks to the line, licks his lips, hands the ball off to Jordan Howard. Licks his fingers, sorry. Thank you, Herbie. Licks his fingers and then hands the ball off to Jordan Howard. On the first play. And remember, Roy had told you that he charted every play. And we went back and forth. And you yelled at me on the text line. Well, guess what, Roy? Your dumbass hypothesis was disproven on the first play from scrimmage. The video's so good, it looks doctored. It's so clear. And again, just go to my Twitter account, at Lawrence W. Holmes. I put the play up. It looks so clear that it looks doctored because there is a close-up of Mitch licking his fingers before the ball is snapped and then handing the ball off. So as I kept asking Roy, are you sure? Because, I mean, if you're talking about 100% tell, like that would be a big thing. That would be a really big thing. No, it's totally, 100%. It's like he's eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's 100%. I'm like, did you really watch all of the plays, Roy? Oh, why are you asking me? Of course, I watched all the plays. I charted it with my wife. The first play. I told Herbie today, like I came back in, like I had my workout. I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, eat breakfast and I'm going to chart these plays. And I had the pad like right there on the table. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to settle in. Maybe I'll find out, like maybe it's watch the whole first quarter and see if there's actually a trend there. It was the first play. So go look at it. It is at the top of my Twitter account right now. And as I said, it looks so good that you would think that Jim Acosta was a part of this. It looks that good that you think it's doctored.
He does it twice.
Yes! That's right, Tony. He licks his fingers twice and then hands the ball off. So yes, Roy gets dunked on and all of you who backed him get dunked on too. All of you were like, well, he might be right. All I was asking was that he just dig a little bit deeper. And you know, and I know that he didn't watch every play. And when I said it, you're like, no, he's a good caller. I don't know why that's my voice for score texters, but I guess that's what the voice is going to be. He's a good caller. The first play.
If random caller Roy could figure that out. Guys whose job it is to figure those things out has had, what, a season and a half to figure this out, and they couldn't do it.
Tony, I'm not telling you the score callers are wrong, because this week there have been a couple of different items where score callers have been right on, including Cody Parkey should go kick down at Soldier Field. What I'm telling you is that I didn't think that he was wrong. I just questioned whether or not he said, I questioned whether he was a liar. That and what we found out is either Roy is an idiot or he's a liar. And I enjoyed the people who texted in and were like, did you know that it's 100% tell that when Mitchell Trubisky is behind Cody Whitehair, he yells hike and then gets the ball? I enjoyed those texters last night. So I'll be expecting an apology from all of you clowns that texted me that I was too rough on Roy. I'll be expecting that apology. It's fine if you don't want to send it. I get it. You're too proud to admit that you were the jerk in that situation last night and not yours truly. All I ask is that you do the work. If you're going to come to me with a theory, and we've had great callers from the time that I have been here at the Score that actually are looking through stuff, looking through video, looking through statistics, and coming up with stuff that maybe we missed. Texas says, oh my God, Lawrence, you're so petty. Yes, I am petty LaBelle today. You know why? Because you should have been on my side and you weren't. So yes, you're going to get dunked on by Richard Petty. Yes, that's me. What other Petty Duke, whatever other things that you want to say. Yes, I'm being petty. That's how it is. Since you guys, I'm supposed to take the high ground now? Oh, no, no, no. Since you all decided that I wasn't trustworthy enough, so it said you stopped charting after the first play? Yes. Yes, I did. Because I didn't have to anymore. It was 100% tell. According to Roy, every time he licks his fingers, he's going to pass. And on the first play from scrimmage, he licks his fingers and hands the ball off. This texter says, I disagree with your assessment on Roy. He's either a liar or an idiot. He's an idiot liar. Oh, thank you, Tom Petty. Very well done. Very well done. Yes, texter, we're putting Roy's ass on a poster tonight. Who's the French guy that Vince Carter dunked on? Roy's that guy now.
I think it's Frederick Weiss.
Yes, he's that. Petty White. Thank you very much, Texter. Keep coming with the names. Petty Boop. I love it. You gonna challenge me? To Tom Petty and the Hard Dunkers. Yes, this is great. So Roy gets dunked on. And you know what, 847 texter? This is kind of embarrassing. You can get dunked on too. Because I didn't see you having my back last night. The people who have my back, I'm with you. You roll with me. And that's what I'm here for. You. Not these other jerks. Ooh, Petty Wop, that's good. 219 texter. Roy gets dunked on. There. And Mitch doesn't have a 100% tell. Well, he licks his fingers and then he's going to throw the ball. Or maybe he licks his fingers before every play. I don't know. I didn't chart the rest of them. You know why? Because I didn't have to. Because after the first play from scrimmage, my point was proven. So I could back the hell up. And then dunk on Roy. He deserves it. Every bit of it. Petty melt. That is fantastic. Peppermint Petty.
My favorite is the Petty Pendergrass.
Oh, that's nice. Petty Bridgewater. All right, that's stretching it, but I will allow Petty Ruxpin. That's quality stuff right there. Ace Ventura and the Petty Detective. Petty Mercury. All right, that's probably stretching it a little too far. So now we've got Freddy, Teddy, whatever else is going in.
Petty Lauren Maltese, I saw one.
That's very good. It doesn't get more Chicago. Oh, thank you for this one, Texter. Petty Officer Lawrence. Yes. That is good. Petty Brewski. That's right. So you, whatever you want to call me as far as petty, I'm petty that. Petty wise. Okay, now we're probably going off the rails. This 309 Texas, get over yourself. You get dunked on too. When we're wrong here at the Score, you guys love to call up and text. So guess what? You're going to get the treatment too. And as I said, if you don't believe me, go to my Twitter account, at Lawrence W. Holmes. It's the first play from scrimmage. For the guy that, Tony, can you run Roy again? For the guy that saw every play, that charted every play, it was the first play from scrimmage.
Go out to Elmhurst and talk with Roy. Hey, Roy, you're on the score.
Hey, how you doing? I just want to give you a call. This Sunday, I was able to pick up every pass play that Mitch Trubisky threw on because he has a habit of licking his fingers before he throws the ball. Look at the film. Every run play, he will not lick his fingers. Every pass play, he's licking his fingers. That the offense or the defense is going to pick up on that and be able to key on a pass play. So he needs to take care of that habit or mix it up when he runs, lick his hands. And so that
let me ask you a question about this. Have you charted every play this season?
Not every play this season, but every play last game. So unless he breaks that habit, they're going to know when he's passing.
I'm not saying I don't believe you. It's just that it would be easier for me to believe you if you
look
had
at
said,
the film.
Yes! In the face! In the face! Tony, thank you for that. We're going to take a break and we're going to get on with the show. There's actually something I want you to hear about the Bears offense that doesn't have to do with Mitchell Trubisky licking his fingers that I talked with Anthony Heron about. It's really good stuff about trust and him trusting what he's seeing and learning. We'll do that next here on The Score. This hour is being brought to you by Continental Motors. Searching for a Honda CRV? Search ContinentalHonda.com for the Continental difference. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I'm here with you until Bulls basketball. We will talk with Dan Durkin in about 20 minutes about the Bears versus the Vikings. I appreciate everyone that's come in with the text on the Petticoat. That's pretty good. Petticoat Junction, for those of us in the older half of the demo, is good. I like that. Petty Pendergrass, which is what Roy pointed out. But let me get back to the football. Anthony Heron and I talk once a week. He's really good. If you haven't heard him, usually Tuesdays at 6 o'clock is where we can find him. That's usually when he's on with us in the 6 o'clock hour. We had a very cool conversation about the concept of trust when it comes to this Bears offense. And I think the difference in Trubisky is he's trusting what he's seeing. He's trusting what's being called. So I asked Anthony about how important that is for a young quarterback.
It's huge because for a player at any position, but especially a quarterback, to have tangible evidence, the results of what your coaches are implementing schematically, and to see that it works, and for a quarterback to see that it can lead to receivers running scot-free, and it's just up to you to do your job and make the proper read and deliver the ball on time with accuracy, that just leads to the furthering of your comfort with what they're doing for you. And when the Khalil Mack trade was made, one of my first reactions to it was that now it's on Mitch, because you know when some of the offseason moves were being made and we saw Ryan Pace starting to put so many pieces in place, and even at the press conference, you know, after John Fox gets fired and they extend Ryan Pace, and he verbally puts the onus on we're going to surround Mitchell Trubisky. This is Mitch's show, Mitch's team. We're going to surround him with as much as we can and put him in a position to lead us to a championship, all those things that Ryan Pace talked about then. And then fast forward to all these acquisitions that took place throughout the offseason, culminating with the Khalil Mack deal. Once the Khalil Mack trade got made, that's where, to me, it was fully about they got a defense that's ready to ride, that's going to likely be championship level at this point. There's so much offensive talent that's going to surround this young quarterback. He's got a play caller who will take pressure off of the offensive line. So any of the, a lot of the pass protection issues we saw in the past, and I talked to you about this, shortly after Matt Nagy was brought in, was, his system was going to take pressure off of Massey and Leno and the pass protection as a whole. So once those things happen, it was about Mitch being able to be the guy, being able to play at a high level, because regardless of everything else that's around there, the National Football League of today won't have your Trent Dilfer type of Super Bowl champ. That's going to be a you know, a really a few and far between sort of deal just with the way the league is structured right now. You're not going to see the Brad Johnsons of the world winning Super Bowls, and especially if you're trying to have a window where you're going to compete and win for multiple titles, you need a playmaking quarterback. So with everything the Bears did over the past year to 18 months was about setting Mitch up to be the guy who would lead them to championships. And once the Khalil Mack thing happened, it was like, okay, now the team is ready to ride for sure. The roster is set to be able to do what they wanted to do, and the pressure will now, the onus will now be on Mitchell Trubisky to mature to become that guy, and we're seeing him sort of steadily make that progression. He's definitely not there yet, but the progression is becoming more tangible. The evidence is starting to be there that he's making the strides in that direction.
So that was Anthony Heron on the show on Tuesday, and I think that it's good where you're talking about a quarterback that believes what he sees. And one of my issues with Mitchell earlier in the year was that I felt like he wasn't throwing with conviction. And what I think we've seen now is that if he believes it, you're going to see the best throws. Another argument that I've heard against the Bears this week has been, well, who have the Bears played? And sure, their schedule has been really soft, and I think that it's been fortuitous of them if you look at some of the things that happened where this guy's out or this guy's out and the Bears kind of catch a break, but you still need to win those games. So yes, you are talking about a Bears team that hasn't beaten anyone whose record is above 500. Guess what? Their opponent hasn't beaten anyone above 500 either. So I call it a wash, but yes, it's frustrating when the Bears were part of the reason why Aaron Rodgers was hurt, and then he was able to still come back and beat them in the first game of the season. Seattle didn't have their defense at all. Bobby Wagner was out of that game. KJ Harris was out of that game, and the Bears won that game. Mitchell didn't play very well against the Cardinals, but the Bears rallied and were able to win the game. Tampa Bay is trash. And you know me, I've been saying throw that game out. The Dolphins, you lose the game, even though the starting quarterback doesn't play, you end up with Brock Osweiler out there. Against the Patriots, Gronk doesn't play. Against the Jets, Darnold doesn't play. And against Buffalo, Josh Allen doesn't play. Not that I think it would have made that much of a difference, but maybe it would have made a little bit of a difference. So, yes, they have been lucky. They have caught teams at the right time, and for the most part, they've played bad teams. I think that it's really important that you have to beat those teams. And here's the thing. The Bears are beating those teams by quite a bit, other than the Arizona game. They're winning games, and they got a good clip of scores. Like, they beat Detroit by two scores, and we all know that that game wasn't even close to being a two-score game. And if it weren't for Cody Parkey, they'd have won that game by 20 points or more. So I don't think that you should eliminate the Bears from are they a really good team conversation just because they haven't beaten anyone yet. Did I say Darnold didn't play? Sorry about that. Their receivers. Quincy Enunwa didn't play, and who's the other starting receiver?
The guy from Seattle?
Yeah. They didn't play. Sorry, but you're right. Darnold played. Bilal Powell was out. It was supposed to be the two Bilals. But yes, the quarterback played. The really good the kind of good offensive players didn't play. Thanks for the correction. See? I'm willing to take instruction. McHenry and JJ. Hey, JJ, you're on the score.
Yay, what's going on? Love your show.
What's up, JJ?
The guards aren't supposed to be playing for Minnesota this coming weekend on Sunday. So the Bears are catching a break right there too, right?
Yeah, and that's – would you rather – like, here's my thing. If they get a break, they should take advantage of it. Isn't that the point of getting a break? You should take advantage of the break that's handed to you. And Minnesota's offensive line has been kind of jumbled up all year long. Like, they've had problems. Now, the Bears' offensive line is jumbled up, too. They've had to move some pieces around the chessboard. Curse. Thank you, 779 Texter. They've had to move some pieces around the chessboard as well. And we'll see if it ends up working. Here's what I said during transition. Kirk Cousins has more fumbles than anybody in the NFL over the last four seasons. He loses fumbles. And what does Khalil Mack do really well? Strip sack. Well, I mean, he does that. Like, there's not anything that he doesn't do well. But you're seeing that that's a guy that can get after the quarterback. The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Get Covered Illinois. There are only a few weeks left to enroll in a health plan on Get Covered Illinois. You must sign up for a plan by December 15th to start 2019 with the coverage that you need. Go to getcoveredillinois.gov or call 1-866-311-1119 to shop for a plan or schedule free in-person help. I'm looking forward to this game. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be heat. And the Packers did both the Vikings and the Bears a solid last night by giving each of them room to lose, by not having any real pressure on them if they lose other than internal pressure. It'll still be a race, and it'll be, what, a half-game lead if Minnesota wins the game because of that weird tie. When we come back, we're going to talk with one of the really smart guys who covers football in this town, Dan Durkin. We'll do that next here on The Score.
Every defense every week is going to have a different scheme and way to attack. And then they're going to look at things that we do and try to prepare through their self-evaluation, or their scouting reports on us. And so that's the chess match of coaching with that. But we'll continue to just keep playing the way we've been playing. And if we feel like wherever our weaknesses are, we'll try to get those to become strengths and vice versa.
That was Bears head coach Matt Nagy talking about this team and what they've done so far and how they can go up against the Vikings this weekend. They've done very well offensively. I want to talk about what the Bears are doing and why they're doing it well. And when I want a great breakdown, I break stuff down with Dan Durkin. He used to work here at The Score. Now he covers the Bears as an analyst for The Athletic. If you haven't gotten a subscription to The Athletic, I think that you should. There are a lot of great writers like Dan, and Dan is doing video breakdowns with all 22 looks and all sorts of stuff for you. You can follow him on Twitter at DJ Durkin. I think it's safe now to follow his Twitter account these days after some of the goings on at Maryland. He now joins me here on The Score. What's up, Dan?
Hi, Lawrence. How are you, man?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm great. And you are correct. It is, I guess I can like step out from behind like the Twitter rock that I hid underneath for a couple weeks there because of everything that was going on. It's funny. Somebody was like, you should just change your handle. And I'm like, why should I change my handle? I'm not the, you know, like the cretin in this situation. So yeah, it was a very interesting few months.
No, it's the scene from Office Space. Why should I change my name?
Michael Bolton, exactly.
He's the one who sucks.
Exactly.
So let's talk about this Bears offense and the steps forward that Trubisky has taken. I thought that last Sunday was the best game that he played. When you broke down the film on Mitch, what did you see?
Yeah, just command and control is the way that if I was to like just to distill it down to a few words. He clearly was comfortable with the game plan. I think that Matt prepared him very well from what he was going to see from the Lions, and it came to fruition. But the decision making really stood out to me, and so what was interesting is the Bears chose to go up tempo. They went no huddle right off the bat, and they were basically just rolling a few plays in there and allowing Mitch just to get things settled at the line of scrimmage. I thought that, you know, like little things that people might overlook, his use of the hard count and how he used the cadence as a weapon as far as getting the Lions to declare their coverage intentions and their gap intentions with their front right off the bat. Those are savvy things, and those are things that sometimes people overlook when it comes to evaluating a quarterback. I think Aaron Rodgers has perfected it as much as anybody in the league, and he typically gets like a free play a game from it. But the way Mitch used it was to figure out which play he actually wanted to get, the team to run at that point in time. And what was cool is that, I don't get this when I go to the games at Soldier Field, but hearing the audio on the Fox broadcast and like hearing him just command and communicate, it was cool to see him walk up to the line of scrimmage. He said trash one time. So that's basically like, hey, we're not going with the first play. We're on to the second play that we talked about. And so now, he got them up there. He called the second play. He, again, used his hard count to kind of figure out what the coverage was so he knew where he wanted to go the ball. So things like that are huge, because just 7 weeks ago, I was writing about him after the Arizona game saying that he was clearly thinking too much. And he kind of alluded to that. Like, look, this is what I'm comfortable with. I wasn't thinking too much. I was reacting. And the results were obviously stellar last week.
I had a conversation. I played the cutback before you came on with Anthony Heron about this idea of trust with Nagy and Helfrich and Trubisky. It seems like they're there, that they have now reached the point where he can believe what he sees, and the stuff that they're, they talked a lot about, oh, things look great in practice. Well, no one's trying to hurt you in practice. And mm-hmm. Now he's seeing this stuff that they've been talking about be effective during games. What do you think that does for a young quarterback?
It's huge, because it's exactly what you're talking about. There's a trust now in that the coaches are programming him appropriately. They're breaking things down. They're understanding how defenses are going to approach the Bears situationally based on what they put on film. Teams don't really change their stripes significantly over the course of the season. It's very difficult to do. So you can get into somewhat of predictable situations to figure out, hey, in this scenario, they've shown this particular coverage look against this personnel, 70% of the time. Sometimes they'll bring a fifth rusher or sixth rusher in this, but the majority of the time, this is the look we can expect to get there. They're programming him with those things. And then when it actually works out, what you see is how it benefits Mitch's mechanics. And that's the biggest difference that I saw last week when it came down to him not thinking and just being able to react and fall back onto a mechanic and a motion that he's done tens of thousands of times. You saw the ball coming out on time. You saw the ball coming out quickly. You saw the drops, meaning how many steps he's taking, being tied with the releases of the receiver. So everything was just in sync and went in rhythm. Where he's gotten into trouble and how his mechanics break down are situations where he steps back and what he sees isn't what he's expecting. Now all of a sudden he's hitching with his delivery. He's thinking a little bit. So his feet get off and his arm gets ahead of his lower body. And like that's when the ball sail on him. That's when he has a tendency to throw the ball into harm's way. But last week it was just very decisive. The man-based coverage scheme that the Lions like to run, they used to spy a lot. So it was a lot of single opportunities that the Bears knew they would get, and they won those individual opportunities. Obviously, Allen Robinson was phenomenal. Anthony Miller was phenomenal. So just a huge step forward for Mitch, just in terms of understanding what his coaches are telling them, executing it, and then his mechanics following suit.
Dan Durkin of The Athletic joining me here on The Score. You can follow him on Twitter at DJ Durkin. I've been going through the numbers over the last couple of weeks and trying to figure out, because we're all programmed as football fans to think a run game matters. And I work with Matt Forte, who's saying, look, if you're not practicing running and you need it, it's hard to get it going once you actually need it. I'm stuck. I'm not sure that the Bears necessarily need what we traditionally think is a run game. What do you think about it?
The NFL is evolving. And I think that when you look at some of the, if you were to look at the top, I think 10 or 12 passing offenses when it comes to yardage and just passing touchdowns, I think 8 of them would be in the playoffs right now. So there's a definite shift. And if you were to flip that to running teams, you have teams like Cleveland that are up there, there is a shift in the NFL as far as the most successful teams in the league right now and the most high powered offenses are getting the ball down the field by throwing it. It's the way that it works. I think that the rules play a little bit of part into this as far as like what cornerbacks can and can't do as far as contact is concerned. Everything benefits the offense. The quarterbacks are obviously protected more in the pocket, so that's changing how people rush the passer. So basically what it comes down to is, even in how you can hit in the open field as far as somebody in the secondary. So teams are incentivized to throw the football. So I do agree that they need to find out what their identity is as a run team. They certainly have not figured that out. I think Mitch has probably been their most consistent weapon in the run game, and that to me is not sustainable. It showed up last week against the Lions as well. They made that game longer than it needed to be simply because they couldn't keep the clock going with the run game. So I think it's a combination of a couple of things. One, schematically, they really don't know what they do well as far as, like, are we a gap team? Are we a zone team? Are we a drive block team? You know, like, I don't think that they figured that piece out. I think Jordan Howard doesn't look the same in terms of explosiveness and finding the hole and reading his blocks seems to be a step slow. And then the third part is the offensive line just isn't clearing as many clear aiming points for him in the run game as they have in the past. So he's getting hit in the backfield a lot. So there's a multitude of factors with it, but as the weather starts to turn south in Chicago, as the playoffs come around, they're going to need to figure out how they can manufacture yardage in the run game. And this trying to run to the sidelines that they do a lot, this horizontal run game, will not get it done as the season progresses and you're playing defenses that can beat you to that point of the field.
How much fun are you having breaking down Khalil Mack tape?
I mean, it seems fake at times, if that makes sense. I mean, just to see somebody out there be able to physically dominate, you know, like men that are, you know, in some cases 60 pounds heavier than him with one arm, and then, you know, just be able to, you know, beat them not only with power, but with quickness and savvy. I mean, this is like Julius Peppers stuff, maybe even, you know, like times 0.5 or something like that. So, I mean, I think that we've taken like that viewership of Julius Peppers and just how, you know, wonderful it was to watch him as a technician and a physical specimen, and then amplify it a little bit with Khalil, because he is, not only is he a phenomenal pass rusher, he's awesome against the run. I think that gets overlooked a lot. He is so good against the run. He is so stout and so strong at the point of attack. So it is very, I think it's a great time for Bears fans to really say, hey, you have a legitimate game changer like you did, you know, like when Lance and Brian and Julius were here, that's just elevated the play of everybody else in that defense. Now they have a legitimate star, not taking anything away from Akeem Hicks, who to me was the best player on the team before they acquired Khalil Mack. Now you're putting them next to each other on that side of the line of scrimmage. So that's elevated the play of Danny Trevathan. It's elevated the play and allowed Eddie Jackson to take more risks. Kyle Fuller's having a much better season because he can gamble and you know, jump routes a little bit more. Bryce Callahan's going to get paid like he should, as one of the best nickel corners in the league. So he has completely amplified all of the playmakers on this team, and it's been a joy to watch.
What does Minnesota do well?
Obviously they are also strong along the defensive line. You're talking about two legitimate cornerstone ends in Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter. And then on the interior, you have Sheldon Richardson, Tom Johnson. They can completely fry your protection scheme and blow up your gaps when it comes to how you approach the line of scrimmage with your offensive line. And are you keeping in running backs or tight ends to help out? So they're very strong there. Offensively, I think they throw the ball very well. Adam Thielen, to me, is the best route runner in the NFL. And his chemistry with Kirk Cousins just came so quickly, and it's really opened up so many things for that offense. So those are the two areas that I think that they are the best in. I think they're vulnerable on the offensive line, though, however. But definitely going to stress the Bears' protection when it comes to how they can keep Mitch upright. And then I think that it's also going to be a test of the secondary as well, because they do a lot of scheming, but they also have individuals who can get themselves open when it comes to the passing game. So huge test for the Bears on both sides of the ball.
Dan, I respect your football opinion. I know that you look at a lot of tape from a lot of different areas. In the next segment, I'm actually going to play a piece of sound from Connor and Dan when they were talking earlier this week about what in the world are defenses supposed to do against some of these offense. I'd love to know, where is their defensive innovation around football from what you're seeing?
I don't know if there really is like an innovation. I think that honestly, if I am a defensive coordinator, or if I'm a scouting department, when it comes to constructing playmakers on that side, I'm looking for guys who can turn another team over, whether it's strip the quarterback in the backfield or make a play in the secondary. I think you just need to find playmakers, guys who are willing to take risks on the ball, because schematically now the offenses are doing so much when it comes to how they're using shifts and motions and just getting people isolated in certain situations, to where right now when it comes to innovation, everything to me is on the offensive side of the ball. There's been swings in the past where you've seen like what Jim Johnson, what he was able to do with the Eagles in the past, and obviously like what Rod and Lovie were able to do with the Tampa 2. But I mean, for the past 5 or 6 years, the flow has been towards the offensive side. So I think defensively, they're playing catch up at this point in time because so many college concepts have crept their way into the NFL and people are realizing that they work. So to me, when it comes to defenses, I'm looking for guys who are going to just turn people over because right now there's nothing really schematically you can do other than take a gamble on the ball. And the Bears have done that very well this year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what innovation comes from it because these offenses, whether it's the Rams or the Saints or the Bears or the Chiefs, it's going to be a problem until the rules move back so that defenders can play a little bit or someone figures out how to get more kind of loose players on the field, like positionless players on the field. And I'm not sure that we're even close to that happening yet. Dan, as always, I appreciate your time. You do incredible work for The Athletic. I'm looking forward to your breakdown after the game Sunday night.
Thanks for having me, Lawrence. Have a great weekend, man.
You do the same. That's Dan Durkin from The Athletic. He does great work. Follow him on Twitter. He's not DJ Durkin, but his Twitter handle is. It's caused him quite a few problems over the last 4 or 5 months. As I said to Dan, I ran across a great conversation about football with Connor McKnight and Dan Bernstein earlier this week. I want to present it to you, share a little bit of the text exchange that Connor and I had about it, and talk about it with you. And it's the idea of what do defenses do? How can defenses evolve? I'll share that with you next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.